It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Tonight, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
Independence of me, Ernest Hancock in studio. I got Scott Decker. We're going to go ahead and get you some more, you know, segue this into the another wave of this kind of activism when he and I got to meet each other back in 97, 98. And it just kind of just dovetailed right into it. I'll go ahead and finish the story. After my initial meeting with the Goldwater Institute guy and the Lincoln Caucus and the Republicans, okay, they came to me, and I said, no, don't want to play. Have a nice day. Sounds like two fleas arguing over who controls the dog. I'm good. Yeah, but you could what? Be one of you guys? Yay. You know, that was, I understood. I didn't want to do that from the beginning. And there's all kinds of other little stories in between there, but the bad guys. Then that evening, I get a call from Gary Fallon, another friend of mine. They said, look, they want to meet with us together for breakfast tomorrow at some resort up in North Scottsdale Road there, some big resort. We're going to go have brunch. And I go, I don't want to come on, Ernie. You know, I promise. He was friends with some of these people, and he's like, all right, fine. So we go there, and they really wanted that database. Promise all kinds. Look, you're not getting it. I mean, now what I will do is, if you'll pay for a mailing, I will go ahead and send an issue of Citizens Taking Initiative, the newspaper, to everyone on that database, and you can put whatever insert flyer you want, write a column, do it. Knock yourself out, man. I don't care. Oh, we don't want to be a certain. I go, well, then you don't get it. Yeah, but we go, and then all of a sudden, two girls came by. Beautiful brunette and a blonde come by. Oh, hey, how you doing? You know, what's up? Oh, who's your friends? Yada, 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 yada. Then they left, and I'm going, wow, okay. And he goes, oh, yeah, I met him last night here and so on at the resort, and kind of, yeah, pretty good, huh? Totally went over Gary's head. He missed the whole thing. He's a good little Catholic boy, man. He didn't even see it. And I'm going, yeah. So I could see what was going on. Yeah, would you like to meet them? I mean, you know, this kind of thing. I'm going, yeah, no. I talked to Gary. I go, Gary, you didn't see what was going on, did you? What? So I'm going, no, I definitely knew I didn't want to deal with these guys. So, no. A day or two goes by. Okay. We will pay for your mailing. And you will put that in, and you'll put this flyer in. And what it was is, it was calling everybody to go to a new park that was downtown, and everybody's going to meet there, and then they're going to march around Dennis DeConcini's thing and get some press and everything, which they eventually did. Okay, fine. That was what they got. They got the people came out. There's probably, I don't know, 7,500 people that showed up, and they got there in the press and whatever made them feel better. But they were doing this around the country, getting access. But they really wanted Arizona because it was the highest percentage. They were targeting DeConcini. They wanted Congressman John Kyle to be senator. Now, there was other stuff that was going on at the same time, too. They did a mailing to every registered Republican in the state saying, you now have this new law that Symington had gotten passed, the governor at the time, that allowed you to do early voting. So what they did is they sent a postcard that went to him. If you want to be an early voter, just fill this out, sign it, and just send it. You know, put it in the mailbox. It was all return postage. All you had to do was just sign it. That's all you had to do. Well, it said it goes to the elections department, you know, P.O. box, blah, blah, blah. You'd think it might have went to the Maricopa County or state elections or something like that, and they would send them an early ballot. No, it went to the elections department of the Republican Party. They go down to the post office and get these hundreds of thousands of cards. Then they put it through an IBM scanner, and it scanned all the people that returned the cards because it had a little barcode thing on it. So, boom, it generated a list that they had a phone bank down there. And they called everybody, and they go, who are you voting for this, this, and this race? And there were three races they were targeting. Republican Fife Symington for governor. John Shattuck, that later would bring back the TARP, okay? National socialization of the economy isn't fascist. When I do it, John S.S. Shattuck, okay? I knew him back in the day, and he was, oh, yeah, you got to get in to, you know, to stop the really bad stuff. Like what? National socialization of the economy? You mean like that? Well, he was the one that did. Now, he's not running now. He decided he's not running because we really hammered on him. We got that taken care of. But the thing is that they wanted Symington, Shattuck, and John Kyle. So they take this database that created from getting all these early ballot requests, and they called everybody. Who do you want for this, this, this? If you answered correctly, you went in this pile. If you answered incorrectly, you went into the dumpster. And we know this because we were dumpster diving. We learned that from an activist out of Vegas when they were coming by our headquarters that we had. And all of a sudden, this VW bug goes and takes on all the trash bags and then squeals out. And I go, what the heck was that? And they're holding them onto the garbage bags on top of their car and everything. And they go, they're dumpster diving. And she goes, and we didn't have anything. We didn't know what the heck we were doing. And she goes, I'll show you. Get in the pickup truck. We went down to the Republican Party headquarters, the Democratic candidate for governor, Republican candidate. He shredded all his stuff, the Republican guy. And then we go in and we go in, and there was a line. There was people, you know, we had to wait our turn. So they go in there looking for whatever. Okay, our turn. She dumped in, and there was a laser toner cartridge in there, and it was dark, and we didn't know. She came out later. We get back to the office. She was black. We're going, whoa, man. Well, what we had gotten was all kinds of stuff. We could see, and one of the things were these cards. And we're like, what the heck is this? Oh, then we started figuring it out, and I knew some people in the Republican Party, and they were explaining to me what was going on. They, if you didn't answer their survey the way they wanted, the people they wanted voted, your request for an early ballot just went in the trash. The other ones, they took and bundled them tens of thousands at a time. There was no way they were checking them. They just a time management. We did a freedom of information request. How many people are checking the signatures on the bringing up their voter registration? Everything. I learned this from Scott Decker later on how you can pull this stuff up as a public record and so on. So anyway, so we understood what was going on. What they did is they would send these out and they would get their early ballot because they knew they were going to vote the way they wanted. Oh, and BTW, by the way, they're doing the exact same thing still. This is how they're doing it. You'll get the early ballot request only for the people that support what they wanted. Because local guys running for a different office will ask them, you know, they'll inventory, they'll say early ballot requests into this, and it's their PO box. It's not illegal. They get it. And then they do a survey of them. If the guys aren't going to vote for them, they just throw them in the trash. They're the ones they send forward. Pretty good work if you can get it, right? So I go, okay, I see what's going on. So then I'm going, all right. What did they do with this information and all this stuff leading up to the 94 election cycle? All of this was where Frank Luntz from the poll guy from Fox News made his name. He was a younger guy back then. And he went and met with all the United We Stand groups. And they said, yeah, we're mad about this, 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 and this. Guess what happened? That was the contract on America, the contract with America. Okay. So they put all these 10 issues of what they're going to do. They didn't do any of that, but that was their spiel. So now you fast forward to now, it's exactly the same thing with exactly the same people. It's Dick Armey, Newt Gingrich, and then you can add Karl Rove and the other Republican leadership, and they're doing the same thing. They'll take whatever the issues surrounding Ron Paul or this Tea Party thing. Now, they're going to take some out. You know, you're not going to hear about the Federal Reserve. You're not going to hear about ending the war. You're not going to hear about a lot of things. But they're going to come up with this new contract with America due, and they're going to say, oh, vote for us, vote for us. And it starts with this election cycle. And there will be a lot of Republicans that will take over from the Democrats, assuming that, you know, even the election thing is not rigged anyway. Because they don't have to convince you to vote for them. That's not what they have to do. They just have to convince you that all your stupid neighbors and all the crazy other people that don't know nothing, they voted for them. It's just a psyop. They just have to convince you that everybody else is dumb enough to do what they wanted them to do. And then they just turn the dial. Okay. So I've been through this before, and I recognize exactly what they're doing, and it's the same people doing the same thing. It worked before. That's what's happening. At that same time is when we had an initiative to eliminate a call for a constitutional convention, and they freaked out because they wanted to have the ability in the future to say, we need a balanced budget amendment. That's what this, you know, this amendments convention to the Constitution is about. They don't call it a con-con. No. It's not a constitutional convention. It's an amendments convention, Article 5 amendments convention. Same thing. But a bunch of states since then have repealed their call. Arizona was one of them in 2003. Said, no, we're not doing this anymore. Oklahoma did it just last year. We talked to Representative Charles Key just last week. He said, yeah, in Oklahoma just last year we repealed this. They're going to try and do it again. You know, I see where this is going. Oh, when we come back, we're going to talk to Scott Decker. He has some information. He moved here from Idaho right in the middle of all this and got his own perspective. He's going to share with us when we come back here on Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, my in-studio guest, Scott Decker, in just a little bit.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
I want to break free.
Yeah, I got to break free here on Declare Your Independence. With me, Ernest Hancock. And, you know, sometimes I just, it's a teeth-grinding, tooth-chipping kind of I-want-to-break-free thing. And as I've gone through this, you can understand from, and this is just tippy iceberg kind of, you know, every one of these little stories has, you know, a whole bunch of stuff behind it. But I understood how rigged it was and how they would use the mood of the people in order to justify, you know, vote for us. We're going to do all the things that you want. We pinky swear. Everybody always, I get emails, pinky swear. What the heck is that? You know, you always go and you hold out your pinky and you lock it and then you pull it. I pinky swear. It's like, you know, I cross my heart and hope the pinky swear or something. I mean, you know, that's, you know, it's just something I used when I was a kid. So you go, all right. So we have now they have the mechanism in place, and it got worse with electronic voting and tabulation, and it just got really bad. In 94, I ran for Secretary of State, making a big stinking deal out of this thing. And eventually in 2006, I ran for Secretary of State again, got them to change a bunch of the laws, manual validation. We're in a lawsuit right now. They're still just ignoring it. They can do whatever they want anyway. During this time, I had opened, I just started construction in late 97, December 97. We started a corporation. I built my restaurant. It's a pizza restaurant. We had it going for 5+ years. I'm involved. I'm doing pizza until 2003 when I started doing talk radio. Because when I sold the restaurant, I had a lot of friends go, Ernie, man, you got to tell all these. You got to get on the. We're going into war, and there is nobody out there talking about the libertarian perspective on this thing or having the history of who these people really are. We'll sponsor you if you'll go ahead and work on getting, boom, 2-hour morning drive show we had on KXAM here, and that's when it started. And I'm going, okay, I can do this. Let's give it up for her, because there was a lot of stories to tell. So it was popular, and you know, and then it continued. So at that time, I get a call from my good friend now, Scott Decker, had moved down here from Idaho. Well, go ahead and let's just pick it up there, Scott. You're tell us what you're doing in college and school and your PI work, and you're a young guy, got married, started having kids and everything, moved to Arizona. Tell me what was happening.
Well, I'm from Arizona. I'm from Phoenix. And I've, like we said last time, I've always been into the martial arts. I my plan was to be a professional martial artist. And I got my process server's license here in Arizona, and I was out there throwing some paper, working a little bit. I worked for a PI firm as a process server part-time. It made good money, and it allowed me to train. But then I decided to go to Idaho State University. I decided to go to Idaho State University for two reasons. Number one, they'd let me in. Number two, there wasn't really any good martial arts in Idaho, so I could kind of be a big fish in a small pond, and that's how I was going to qualify. That's how I was going to get up in the rankings or the standings. So I move up to Idaho. I open up my karate school. I tell my parents I'm going to college, but really I'm focusing on my martial arts. And I need to make some extra money. I'm not making it as a martial artist. So I go to work for a company called Idaho Detective Agency and Security Company, and I get my private investigator's license. And it was there that I served process, and I worked as a private investigator for 5 years. I get married, and we had Jordan, and I just got homesick. Idaho is cold. After 5 years of being cold and scraping snow and ice off your windshield, I told Michelle, I just want to go home. I want to see saguaro cactus. You know, I want to be home. I haven't had good Mexican food in 5 years. Let's go home. So we moved down, and I get a job working for a Phoenix-based private investigation company, and I'm their skip tracer. I sit at this desk that faced a cinder block wall for 8 hours a day, trying to find people who primarily have skipped out on their debts. You know, they don't have enough money to pay. All right, they pack up the family in the middle of the night and they leave, they hide, and in most cases, trying to avoid their debts. Well, at some time during my day, I'd have to go on what was called the run, because this is the internet was around, but it was brand new. We were still figuring it out. In the old days, we had to do this old school. The office had all this microfiche, and that's another story too. I mean, all this confidential data that no one's supposed to have, they had it in their office. They bought it from one of the secretaries. Then they had those microfiche duplicating machines. Seems like the Stone Age now, but at the time it was whiz bang.
No, I've used it quite a bit. So we had a microfiche reader too, so that we could make access to it.
Yeah. So, I mean, you think all your information is confidential and secret and private, and, you know, and you got good people who are looking out for you? Wrong. They're not.
They're selling it.
They're selling it. So every day, sometime during the day, I'd have to go to the run. And my run, I had several stops. I'd have to stop at the recorder's office. I'd have to stop at the elections office. I'd stop at the motor vehicles department. I'd go down to the basement of the Superior Court, and I'd go through files. Because in our life, in our current life, everywhere we go, we leave a data trail. The government has made it so it's virtually impossible to live your life without leaving little bits of data about yourself, and that's what I would do. And I did a lot of the same thing when I lived in Idaho, but, Pocatello is a small town. Government's the same everywhere. Government's, you know, crooked and evil and all that kind of stuff. But you get different cultures in different places. So the small town atmosphere, they recognized me when I walked in. They knew who I was. They knew why I was doing what I was doing. They didn't begrudge me my job, and I didn't begrudge them their job. They're just pulling a paycheck like everybody else, or just trying to do their job. If I walked into elections in Idaho and I said, hey, I have a summons to serve on John Doe, is John Doe registered, or can I see John Doe's record? They would tell me, well, no, you can't, because it's only for election purposes. And then that began the negotiation process with them. I'm like, well, what can you tell me? And they're like, well, we can tell you if they're registered or not, and we can tell you if the address that you have is the same address that I have.
Now, the reason for that is when people do petitions for initiatives, or they want to check for when they sign for candidates and so on, there is some public information that has to be available to check to make sure that they are a registered voter, that they're at the place that they are, they're the person that they say they are, so that the petitions are valid. And that's why you get petition gathering companies that have access. They go down and they'll check them. I remember this in the 90s. We used to do that, you know, to check to make sure that the petition signatures were valid before we go paying people that were circulating, that kind of thing. But there was limited information that you're supposed to get, certainly in Idaho. Then you come to Maricopa.
Yeah, I come down here and I walk into elections, and they've passed the keyboard through the, you know, there's a glass counter, or there's a counter with a glass partitioning, you know, the Kingsmen on one side and, you know, the cattle on the other side. And they all they did is, I guess they got tired of providing any sort of customer service. They didn't want to be bothered with us. So they just passed the keyboard through to the public side and turned the monitors around. Anybody could walk up and search anything for any reason.
Now, I remember after this, when we met and we started looking at this, They didn't even have to pass it anymore. They didn't even have the glass. They just had at least four or five computers facing out with the keyboards. You just walked up to them and went and searched them whatever you wanted.
Yeah, you could search anyone for any reason. And I'm not necessarily saying that's a bad thing or a good thing. I'm just saying
that it was a surprise me thing.
Well, I was surprised because, you know, they're supposed to be the custodian of these records, and it's, you could see that we were not a highly valued commodity, at least as units. You know, aggregately, we're very valuable because when they're selling it at 10 cents a name, and I bet you know better than I do, how many registered voters in Maricopa County?
Ballpark? Lot. Million, two,
you know,
lot.
That's a valuable product that they have the ability to sell, but just you or just I.
And they did, and it's 10 cents a name to get it in electronic format. But if you go through a political party, as county chairman, I got the database for all of Maricopa County, 1-2 million people. And the other parties were charging 7 cents a name. We'll give you a deal. Give us the money, and we'll give it to you. And I would just give it out. Oh, that made them mad. They didn't like that done too much. We'll be right back.
There are those that just want to be left alone, and those that just won't leave them alone. Which one are you? The Ernest Hancock Show.
Independence of me, Ernest Hancock, and my good friend Scott Decker. That man, he dropped right into the jungle here. He came back home and, oh, dang. And eventually he got my name and we had some fun, but we got built up to it. I mean, there were some big time, ooh, man, they were bad. Bad. Well, what we're talking about is access to public information. And I learned so much. I remember one time I went on, this information was, we were in lawsuits on all kinds of, I'm always in lawsuit for something. And what happened, I was on the Clear Channel affiliate. And they had me on one of the popular hosts, and I sat down, and they have a computer there for the guest. And I said, you know, everybody that's listening, get in front of your computer. I'm going to show you something. I'm going to scare the crap out of you. Get down, go to Maricopa.gov, go to recorded docs, and I started walking them through, put in a name. You know, pick somebody, you know, Jerry Colangelo, the owner of the Phoenix Suns. You know, you want to know everything about it? Do you? I'll show you how to do it. After the end of the show or during one of the breaks, the board op came in, and he goes, wow. I went and checked my grandparents. I'm the beneficiary of a whole bunch of trust on this deck. I need to go visit them. I got to be nice. And I'm going, there's so much information you can find out. Well, you know, what happens when... So I'm not about keeping all this information really secret as much as I'm worried about it being equal. You know, if they got to find out everything about me, because, you do want some records out there because you want to be able to say, hey, I own this property.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly.
You know, I filed with, and this be mine.
You climb up at the top of the tree and you yell out to everybody, I claim this property as my own, and I'm going to add my labor to the land, and the products of it are mine. Everybody be put on notice.
I'm thinking if you're going to have government, that's one of the things that they do is they just record the deeds of, you know, who owns what.
Yeah.
You know, so I'm good with that.
But now they stamp every baby's butt with an ID number. And that ID number follows you around everywhere you go.
It'll be on your permanent record, which we knew was crap.
They won't even let babies out of the hospital now without a Social Security number.
Oh, IBM commercials. Have you seen the new IBM commercials? This is a baby. No, it's baby's data. We know everything about the baby. Man, it just got born and we got baby logged in. So I'm just, oh, man, this is nasty. You know, it's like that one commercial they're talking about. Fantasy football and DirecTV or something. They got some police officer walking up to some guy's house. Hey, Fred, how you doing? And he tases him. You know, yeah, he's cheating. You know, I'm going, this isn't bothering somebody. I'm going, oh, it just drives me crazy that they would show this kind of stuff. And like, it's funny, you know? So, you know, we're being brainwashed in my opinion. So you come here to Arizona and you're starting to see just how much data is available through these different means. Well, of course, they do this so that you think it's secret, but it's not. They just buy it for 10 cents a name for a few hundred thousand dollars and it changes every quarter. You know, every 3 months they come up with a new list of, you know, new people that registered, change different things, whatever. Because in Arizona, they ask for some really interesting thing that doesn't have anything to do with voting. They want your occupation. They want your phone number. They want the last four digits of your Social Security number. They want your mother's maiden name.
Mother's maiden name. What's one of the security questions on your email or whatever account?
Credit cards. Mother's maiden name.
Yeah, yeah. Just give us your mother's maiden name so that we can verify you.
This is so we're going, we're starting to see, you know, Scott's teaching us something here, but he had a little special interest in this because when you moved back here, you know, if you wanted to register to vote, you're opening yourself up and you had some issues. You didn't want to do that.
No, I wanted to register to vote, but I had an altercation where I got sent out to repossess a car. And I don't like doing that. It's a new job. I was grateful to have a job at all. So they sent me out to do a job. I went out and do a job. I'd go out and I'd see this guy and I'd say, look, you got to get current on your payments because the next time I come out here, I'm going to take your car. And he was always very contrite. He's like, yeah, I'm sorry. You're just having a bad, I get it. It's nothing personal, but the next time I come out here, I'm going to take your car. Well, the next time came around and I took his car, and being foolish, because I felt for the guy, I had given him my cell number. So I take the car, I repossess the car right under his nose. That's kind of a funny story, but I won't waste your time with that right now. And he got upset, and he called he blew up my phone, filled the voicemail with a whole bunch of threats. He was going to kill me. He was going to kill my children. He was going to burn down my house, all that kind of stuff. So I went down to the police station. I filed a police report. They even told me, hey, look, there's nothing that we can do about this unless he admits that he threatened you. Well, guess what he does? He admits it. Yeah, I did it. I threatened him. So he's been convicted or whatever. So, and as this has transpired, I'm like, you know what? I know how they keep their records and I'm not very comfortable. Tayo's not very bright. That's his name. It was Tayo. Tayo's not very bright, but you don't have to be very bright to figure out. So when I registered to vote, I only put my P.O. box down. I gave him my name. I gave him the P.O. box, and I signed it. I think that's all I gave him. And then they sent me a notice a few days later that said I was insufficient in filling out my voter registration card. So I wasn't registered, in other words. So I took that, and I went down to the main elections, Maricopa County Elections Office, and I talked to whatever the clerk was. And I kind of anticipated having the same kind of, you know, dialogue that I did up in Idaho, where they knew me and it's a small town. And I thought I was going to go in there. I'm going to just, hey, you know, this is what happened. What can we do? And well, Scott, you know, these are the rules and this is how we work it out. Not the experience at all I had. I don't know who this clerk was, but I was trying to be this, you know, I guess small town mentality. Hey, how you doing? Being very nice. She couldn't care less about me, my problem, what I wanted. And I'm trying to explain this to her, and it's very clear. She does not care at all about who I am, why I am, whose family is in jeopardy.
The law is the law.
The law is the
okay.
law.
Nah.
So she finally said something to me that pulled my trigger. Because I kept making this plea. I was like, I'm uncomfortable with this, but this is my franchise. This is my right. I have a right to vote. She fired back at me, I guess, so frustrated because we kept going back and forth. She fired back to me, the only people who vote in Maricopa County are those that Karen Osborne says vote. No one has a right to vote unless Karen Osborne say they do.
Elections director.
And I went, really? Well, and that's when I got on my little pony and I got out my lance and I went Don Quixote on him. I decided I was going to make this an issue. And people were coming up to me. It's like, aren't you the guy that wanted his privacy? And now you've climbed up to the tallest hill and are screaming, you know, injustice, injustice. I mean, you're not being very private here. And I said, yeah, I'm the guy who wanted to be left alone. You know, there's two kinds of people in this world, just like you say on your program, those who want to be left alone and those who won't leave others alone. I just want to be left alone. You wouldn't leave me alone. So I want to defend myself. I saw it as my need to defend myself and my family. Fight on.
And that's when I heard of you.
Yes, yes.
So how did you get hold of me or something? I remember getting a call at the restaurant one time from you.
Yeah, I was, well, because I was a registered libertarian up in Idaho, too. I even ran for office up there because you had to. We had to stay on the ballot, and it was all those stupid games. And I picked the short straw, and I even ran up there. So when I came down here, I also wanted to get together with my friends, the people who I knew were going to be my friends and think like me and understand my concerns. And I found out who the county party chairman was, and either you were or you were...
It was probably Scott Granger at the time, and he asked you to call. Maybe I was. I don't remember.
Yeah, I don't remember either.
It doesn't matter. We were doing all the same stuff anyway.
I got told to go down to the Pizza Belly and talk to Ernie. So I walked into the Pizza Belly, and I ordered myself a pie, and I said, "Are you Ernie?" And you're like, "Yeah." And I said, "Well, Ernie, here's my situation. I'm a libertarian," and you looked at just not much different than that clerk, Ernie. You looked at me and went, "So?" And, "Well, you know, I had this problem," and you looked at me and went, "Well, so?" And then I got out my soapbox, and I did this speech for you about the injustice and equal protection, and it's just wrong, and you got that smile on your face. And
I tell you what it is, you know, I can't even count how many times I've had people want me to take on a project for them. They're like, "Well, you know, and I'm running a restaurant." I mean, you know, I'm like, "Oh, please." And I want it to be a pizza revolution. My partner is like, "Oh, no, we'll call it Pizza Belly, and it'll be all about big, you know," whatever, you know. So we had a cool logo and a Pizza Belly, more pizza for you. So anyway, you know, we had a good time with it anyway. But, you know, I really hated that name. But then thanks for bringing it up. So what happened was we went ahead and we go, "All right, well, this guy's serious. I mean, this guy's going to see it through. I mean, you're going to see it through. I mean, I can't keep track of how many times that I would go through this stuff. And then, well, you know, my wife is kind of, and I don't want," but he convinced me that this was a principled issue with him. He was a principled guy, that he had run as a libertarian before. He understood libertarian philosophy. And through his martial arts, he had, you know, that kind of mentality. It was not an assertive or aggressive thing. It's a defensive posture, but you stand your ground. And I'm going, "All right. Let's play." And I'll tell you what we did. And it's just so, it's so creative how we have to be to do these things. But they play bad guys every time. We'll tell you about it when we come back.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Welcome back to Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, and my good friend Scott Decker, another independence declaring kind of guy. I like saying it. Declaring your independence. You know, just, that's a teeth grinder, man. I just, you know, that's why we started. It's always been Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock from 1990. That was my campaign. I'm just like, you know, just, ooh, I knew enough to know I wanted nothing to do with this stuff. But we can highlight it and we can educate people. And I have a lot of people that come to me over there, even still. They, you know, "Ernie, I need and this and you should help because and what." And I tell you what my biggest hesitation is that when I put my teeth into something, I'm like, "Oh, game on. We're going to play." That's the smile. I already see, you know, I'm already, you know, like 6 months down the road. But, you know, if you're not willing to do it, then I can't have your standing. You know, I mean, if you're not willing to see this through, if you don't have the support of your wife, I'm asking questions about, what does your wife think? What about your family? What about your work, your job? I mean, you know, until I get that, you know, why am I going to go all in if you're not? So I need to know. So Scott convinced me that, okay, we're going to go give him what for. So what was the first thing that you did? We go, okay, let's go play. And I gave you the information, what I understood, how these people worked and whatever. So go ahead and give your spiel of it, and then I'll give my perspective.
Well, yeah, you were giving me a lot of the backstory because I didn't know who any of these people were. I didn't know who Karen Osborne was or any of these other people. They were just new names to me. But one of the first things I did is I did the research. I tried to find if there were any other cases out there that were similar to my situation. And I found a case, and I can't remember all the details.
Cause I think it was Virginia.
I think it was in Virginia. Because yeah. It's been 13 or 14 or 15 years ago now, and I haven't even hardly thought about it in a decade. But I found a case in which, I think you're right, I think it was Virginia. There was a Virginia law that required people to put their Social Security number, the entire Social Security number, on the voter registration form. And there was an attorney out there who decided, no, not me. And he refused to put his Social Security number on the registration form. They refused to register him. He sued them, and he won. So
lots of money, too. It was hundreds of thousands of dollars or something. Yeah, he got some kind of settlement.
Yeah, he got some kind of settlement. I don't know what, because it was never about the money. It was right. about the principle. You got in a ring with me, and I'm going to knock you out. So I looked this guy up, and he was very similar to you. He was very similar, like, don't waste my time unless we're going to do this. But one of the problems that I was running into is I had Ernie with boots on the ground here. I had an attorney in Virginia that wasn't licensed, didn't have any authority to practice law in Arizona. It became very, the campaign, if you will, became very cumbersome because you didn't know him and he didn't know you. You were here, he was there. So, but that's what we were using as our basis. That's how we were strategizing that we were going to sue him.
And that's what they were afraid of. And what happened was, is you have a deadline coming up by a certain date and a certain time. It's like Tuesday at 7 p.m. or something is a deadline for you to be able to register and not have standing to sue them. And they were getting worried.
Yeah.
So finally, at the end of the, as we're pushing this and the attorney sending letters and you get into, all of a sudden they say, okay, Scott, come on down with your wife and we'll let you register at Maricopa County Elections Office. So you guys go down there on the deadline, the last day of it, and tell us what happened.
Well, exactly. And my wife is smarter than I am. She knew immediately that something smelled fishy about this, and she said, I'm not doing it. I'm not doing this. I'm just not going to register to vote. Voting's overrated. But I was thrilled. I was like, yay, we win. They give up. They held the registration office open for me. They were supposed to be closed. They were waiting for me. I got a call. I think her name was Jill Kennedy. Jill Kennedy was the county attorney.
Yeah, I've had plenty of run-ins with her.
Oh, because an attorney would never lie. Would they, Ernie?
Yeah.
She said, well, and we had been talking back and forth several times, and they're like, well, why don't you just be reasonable? And I was like, I already tried to be reasonable. We're way past reasonable now. No, Scott, calm down. There's no need for us to do this. I'm sure there's a way that you can register and keep your confident, what you want to stay confidential or private, we can still keep it. Well, how are we going to do that? Well, let's just register you pursuant to the rules that allow indigents or homeless people. We just won't ask. Don't ask, don't tell. This kind of was their attitude. And I'm like, huh, sounds good to me. They held the election or the registration office open late for me. I went down and filled out my voter registration just like they told me to, and I thought I won. What I didn't know is that they were playing dirty pool, that I just did something.
Tell them what they did.
The next day, I got a call from a reporter who wanted to do an interview. And again, I'm not that bright, apparently. I agreed to do the interview with the guy. And I thought, because I thought I was the good guy. I was wrong. This guy said, real nice to me at first. And he basically got down to the end of it and said, now let's talk about your address. Are you homeless? I'm like, well, I just really don't want to talk about that. He says, no, but I want to know, are you homeless or not? Bottom line is, he kept grilling me, you're not homeless, are you? But this was the arrangement with Jill Kennedy. As soon as he was done with the interview with me, he calls Jill Kennedy. Jill Kennedy denied the conversation that we had, of course, because we didn't have it by email, or right? It was over the telephone. I didn't record what she was saying. She'd absolutely denied ever telling him or telling me this at all. The next thing I know, that night, they did this news story where they put my picture on the 6 o'clock news, my driver's license picture, and called me a criminal.
Oh, no. It was better than that. Not the driver's license picture, a picture of the driver's license. It was the entire driver's license.
I never saw it.
I saw it. It was the entire driver's license.
I had people calling me up saying, Scott, you're on the news. And I'm like, really? Why? What's going on? Well, they're saying that you're a felon. They're saying that you committed a class 6 felony voter fraud. I was like, oh, those dirty dogs.
And this is where I come in. I love when they do stuff like this. what was happening at the time, there was a cascade of evil by the bad guys. One of the things was, remember when they were doing the voter registration, you know, early balloting thing and connecting, you know, who's going to vote for them with a phone interview, and then they'd send those forward to get your early ballot, and those that didn't vote the way, say they were going to vote the way they wanted, they threw them in the trash. Well, there was a bunch of other stuff that was going on kind of like that, too. Well, one of the things was, is I go, all right, they wanted to have what they called the straw poll, presidential preference primary is what they call it. They had done this in 90, it was for 96 election cycle, to where they wanted to have Arizona be the first primary. And now we're one of the early ones, you know, but they wanted to be the first one before New Hampshire and all that kind of crap. Well, what they did is they changed the law to where it was a taxpayer-funded primary, but it had no legal obligation to the delegates to be able to force them to vote anyway in the national conventions. It was just a straw poll. It was a presidential preference primary. That's actually what it was called. It was just a survey at the taxpayer's expense. So libertarians go, hey, we choose our delegates at our state convention. We're not going to pay, you know, have taxpayers pay to print libertarian ballots when we are already, you know, select ours like a week before you even have your preference primary. So we're not going to be part of the taxpayer ripoff. So they're like, oh, well, you got to sue. So we did. We filed suit. And won. So we get taken off. At the time, the Democrats joined our suit and they won too because they had an incumbent, you know, Clinton. They didn't want to, you know, be distracted. So the Republicans, they're the only ones that had the primary, and it was so corrupt, and it was just, that's a whole nother story. But then in 2000, they go, we go, oh, we don't want to be part of that one either. They go, oh, no, that was 96 election. You got to sue again. So we go, oh, really? All right. You want to play? Let's play. So what we did is when they did this to Scott, I go, you SOBs, all right, you want to play? Let's play. I go, I get the entire voter database. And as Maricopa County chairman, in 3 weeks, on February 13th or whatever it was, 20, whatever it was, some date I picked, I go, in 3 weeks, I'm publishing the entire thing on the internet. Everybody's going to get to know everybody, what you guys, you know, all the bad guys get. I'm going to put it on the internet. Here it goes. And they freaked. They were, oh, they didn't want, it's okay, all their guys get it, but they didn't want us to. So they freaked out. That tie-dye wearing, dope-smoking, gun-toting libertarian has got the database of everybody, and he's going to put it up. Well, heck, the people didn't even know that I had the access to the database. That freaked them out enough right there. So what happened was, is we go, all right, we're going to put it out. Now, the reason I picked, it was a Wednesday. It was the day after the presidential preference primary, over 3 weeks later. I knew what was going to happen. We were going to draw all kinds of attention about me putting this out, that I was going to get to say, hey, you know, they forced us into this thing. We already picked our candidates. They're making the taxpayers getting rid. I get to say whatever I want while the televisions are on me. I know in 3 weeks I'm going to be front stage, get to say whatever I want. And I had the Arizona Republic on my side. The reason was, is they always wanted access to that database. They wanted it for commercial reasons, investigative, didn't have to go down to the recorder's office to do it. They wanted me to give it to them, because I'm getting it there. I go, fine. They're in a lawsuit with Maricopa County Elections saying this is a public document. And I'm going, look, you sign right here, say it's for political purposes, I'll give it to you. That's the only condition to keep me legal. I'll give it to you. They refused to sign it. So later I go, do you guys still want it? You want it? Well, I'm going to give it to everybody. And I'll make sure you guys get the web page first if you'll come after me. I need you to come after me so that we can get everybody to know what's going on. They said, oh, we can do that. Oh, and they did. It was good. But then fish on. And then we had some fun. Tell you about when we come back.